I brought some notes just in case I get nervous and freeze up. I'm Jennifer Upham, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jennifer.
My sobriety date is January 18th, 2007.
Right.
So, and one white chip. So relapse does not have to be part of your story. It's part of a lot of people's story, and it takes what it takes. But I was just very lucky that when I got here, I was really, really ready. So what it was like, I am the oldest of four girls, and most everybody knows Sarah is my baby sister. She's the youngest of those girls. And the smartest, she got here first. I followed. I was born in Michigan. We were all born in Michigan, and we moved around a lot. It didn't, so this is kind of funny. It makes me nervous having like a family member in the family, because one thing I've noticed is that, you know, as I've gotten sober, like what you think happened to you, it could be like my sister, totally all same parents, same house, same town, same story, but her story is different than mine. And we have another sister, and she, one day she looks at me, she goes, "I didn't know what you're talking about. It wasn't that bad." And I'm like, "What?" But she's not an alcoholic. So I think the funny thing is, like, alcoholics are super sensitive sometimes. And Sarah and I both are, and so it might not be a coincidence. She's really tough, and she thrives in crisis. And she has, you know, as far as we know, like, she's fine. Alcohol never bothered her. So so my story, even though Sarah was there, she might look at me like, "I don't even know what you're talking about," or "I didn't think it was that bad either." I don't know, so it makes me kind of nervous. And neither of our parents are alcoholics, but both of them came from families with, a lot of alcoholism. And I know my dad's dad was an alcoholic, and it affected the family a lot, but they kept it a secret from us. Like, I never knew. He was the best grandpa in the world to me, and I never knew until I was an adult how much havoc and all the stunts that he pulled. I never knew about that until he was, like, dead. We never knew. So I know that affected my dad in, like, his emotional development. And then my mom lost her dad, and her mom ended up, if she wasn't an alcoholic, she was a heavy, heavy drinker and partier, and she pretty much didn't raise her children after her husband died. So there again, my mom's affected by, like, alcoholism and lack of, like, emotional support and development. And so I feel like, you know, everybody was just doing the best they could with what they had, and it ended up kind of trickling down and affecting us kids. But everybody was still just doing the best they could. But it was hard. And I was in ninth grade, and our parents got divorced. And we had no idea that was coming. It was like all of a sudden one day, everything that we knew was kind of normal wasn't normal anymore. My mom wanted the divorce, and so she just felt like this was her time now. It was my time to get, you know, all the things I missed out on, and pretty much just kind of did her own thing. We had, like, our needs met. But we didn't have, like, any parenting. So we knew, for four girls, we could get away with a lot. Sarah wasn't getting away with much, because she was just, like, this big. So that was sad, too, because, like, here we are. There's three teenagers in the house and a little one, and she's picking up beer cans and stuff. You know, we're having parties, and she's, like, she's the cleaner, pretty much. So that wasn't, she took care of it for us. And so it was, there wasn't a sense of, like, security. I always felt like, as the oldest, that if something went wrong, it was going to be all my fault. Like, somehow, now I was, like, parenting these three kids, and they were my responsibility. And I was always fearful. No one ever said it was my responsibility. No one ever even gave it to me. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, "Here, I'm going out, watch these kids." It was just like, but I always felt like, just scared that something was going to go wrong. Always scared. We did scary things. We were nuts. We were partying and drinking and driving and saying we're here, but we knew no one was going to call and check, so we're over here getting in stuff. Boy, like, just, we were all over. We were not the kids you wanted your kids hanging around with. And so high school was rough. Like, I feel like, too, like, I was in kind of a time warp where not just my house was like that, but, like, all my friends' houses were like that. We were in a weird bubble of nobody was looking. And nobody did anything about it. Even the parents that caught us, maybe it was my generation, too. Like, I'm 50, so if you got pulled over by back then in high school, like, the cops would pull you over and they'd say, "You've been drinking, girls?" And we'd say, "Yes, sir, sorry." And he'd say, "Go right home." Like, that was the extent of it. So you didn't even know that it was, like, as bad. We had no idea what normal was because everybody around us was doing the same thing. And I managed to attract those people my whole life, like people who, purposely or not on purpose, would, like, just co-sign my BS. Like, you know that's not right, but I would just do it anyway. No one would tell me, "Hey, I got a better idea. Let's, like, not do that. Let's not get into that." But I started drinking really young, too, because it just settled that fear that I always seemed to have. And I had it even when I was, like, from as long as I can remember, just being, like, in kindergarten or whatever. You know, we had to walk home from school, and I would just run, like, because I just wanted to hurry up and get home, like, just always scared. So drinking helped that. But I knew I drank different when I drank, because I would drink a lot, and I would drink to get drunk, and I was always looking for more. And when the friends had it, like, no one, they would kind of stop, or, you know, they'd have fun with it and then be done, and I would be, like, passed out. And at that age, too, your friends would just leave you, you know. I'd wake up in the lawn, like, in the middle of the night, I'm like, "Where the heck is everybody?" You know, like, we couldn't carry you. So I was definitely drinking a lot more than I should, and drinking and driving in high school, like, a lot of it, scary. I always knew something was wrong with my drinking, but couldn't give it up, because it just filled that void that I had. So later in life, my mom was diagnosed with bipolar, which, now looking back, I'm like, well, that totally makes sense. So now the story is, like, not like, "Oh, God, you know, roll your eyes, talk about mom" kind of thing. It's like, gosh, that's sad. That had to have been really hard to have four girls and, like, you know, dealing with all of those issues. And she didn't know, like, at that time, it was way later in life, that they're like, "This is what's going on with you. Let's get you on some medication." And now, now she's fine. But that was a lot you had to deal with. And my dad, he left, he didn't leave, he just moved to Michigan so he could be able to afford child support and all of that stuff. So we didn't really have a dad around for a while. As my mom got more overwhelmed with taking care of all of us kids, she just gave up. Like, it was more than she could handle. So she writes my dad a letter and says, "On this date, I'm moving out and you're moving in." So we switched parents. And, not too long after that, there's me, there's one 11 months younger than me, and there was, so it was always Jennifer and Jill, Mary and Sarah. And Mary, at 15 years old, got sick with pneumonia, and she died. And it was fairly sudden, like, it was sudden. And she was sick for, like, 5 weeks, but it just was like it came on, she went to the hospital, and she just never came out. And it was hard on our family. It was really hard on Sarah, because that's how we were paired, Jennifer and Jill, Mary and Sarah. Now, here's Sarah. She's the little peanut, and she's all by herself now. Here's my parents, who are divorced. And when you lose a kid, I can't even imagine. But that was almost the end of, like, parenting. us two bigger ones, we were like 18, 17 and 18. So we kind of just focused on going to college and getting that taken care of. And they tried really hard to, like, take care of Sarah, but they were both probably nuts, you know? Like, I would be if I lost one of my kids. They were just devastated. And we didn't have, we just never had, you know how, like, normal families have, like, normal friends, and they all show up, you got people to talk to, and they're, we never had that. We were just always kind of to ourselves. So I felt it was just sad for all of us. We just crumbled as a family. And then just finished raising ourselves like the best that we could. And I was always very like, still again, I'm the oldest and I'll take, so I don't want them to have to spend any money on me. So I put myself through college and got a good job. And then I met a man who I married. And it was, since I had no idea what my normal looked like, he looked fairly normal, and he was. But I didn't. So I, like, in my brain, all I could do is, like, have a checklist of, like, okay, he has a good job, he has a nice family, he's handsome, I should probably marry him. And then all that stuff I was robbed from in my life, I could, like, get, I could make it myself. God didn't give it to me, but by God, I'll make it. And I'll get my own little house and my own little babies, and it'll all be fine. Except I didn't know how to do all of that stuff because I never learned. So I picked the best that I could. But really, I always wish I could have been courageous. I'm so jealous of, like, those girls that are, anybody that goes to college and then they just go. They go do something, you know, they go out and get a job and travel or, like, go away to school or whatever. I literally just said, I was so fearful, I, like, stayed at home till I got married, and then I got married, and then I moved in with, and we had our little house. But, net, like, there was no adventure in there. And if I could do it all again, I wish I had the courage to have just gone out and, like, done. I probably just would have done it drunk and it wouldn't have mattered anyway. I would have just screwed that up. But in my next life, I'm going out there. It's going to be awesome. So we did the best we could. Like, he was kind of, the counselor said, emotionally vacant. And I didn't, I was like, can I have a note? I got to get out of this. But in the meantime, we were together. And it literally almost drove me nuts. Like, I know in the 10 years we were together, like, as that, I got out of that marriage, I was near a nervous breakdown and near crazy. And all because I couldn't ask for help. All because I did not have one normal person to go to talk to. So I drank. And in my mind, I justified the drinking because it was like, well, at least it keeps me here. It keeps me here and it makes me a good mom because good moms stay married to their husbands and keep their families together. And I justified being a drunk mom because being a drunk mom was better than being a single mom. And again, I had no courage. So, like, I just didn't. I was, like, literally afraid to go. I didn't know where I was going to go or what I was going to do. Now I have a God that will take care of all that stuff, no matter how big it is, and I have courage because of that. I don't have courage just because I grew some courage. I have courage. But I'm not afraid anymore. So I was drinking a lot, and we got divorced. And then I was a single mom for a couple years, and I met my current husband. And I just went completely opposite. Like, I got this one that's emotionally vacant, and this one who's got a lot of emotion. He loves me a lot. And when he's happy, he's really happy, and when he's sad, he's really sad. And I'm like, holy crap, I'm not used to all this emotion. I think I'm going to have to drink, probably, because one of us has got to settle down. And he's a lot. Some days he's a lot. So... I'm glad we're still married, but some days it's really hard. one time I was listening to a speaker tape, and the man on the tape said, he was talking to the room, and he said, so, like, raise your hand, everybody that's married in this room. And you could tell by, like, the tone that not many people raised their hands, and I was like, oh, God. And it really hit home that I need to cut that man some slack, because he's not the alcoholic. Now, granted, he was sick enough to marry a sick person. He's got his own stuff. But, like, there could be a good chance that still to this day, could be me. but I never really even thought about that because I have a disease. He's just got a bunch of character defects. And so I've really, like, learned that, like, I need to have grace. Like, I got to give grace. He's given me grace to work through my stuff. I've got to give him grace to work through his stuff. And, like, and we just love each other enough to stick it out. But it's, when you bring all this baggage into a relationship, if there is somebody here that is not married, get it together. Before you pick somebody, get together. Because you will pay for it for a very long time. Like, you just want to be, like, the healthiest person you can be. So then when you meet that person, you'll be like, there he is, there she is, I know that's them. Otherwise, you just got to work all your junk out together, and you could almost kill each other someday. But so I wish I'd have done that, too. If I could go back and do it again, I would have taken, after my divorce, some time to figure out how I got myself in that mess. And what do I need to do not do that again? And I did make it into these rooms a couple years after we were married. Slowly, because he was yelling at me, telling me I was an alcoholic, so I was like, well, now I'm not going, because I think it's your idea. So I waited long enough. Waited long enough, so it didn't look like it was his idea. And I decided to come in. And then Sarah was already in. And I saw it working for her, and I wasn't afraid. I knew it was going to be, like, awesome people when I got here. So she was a really great example. We're the first people, as far as I know, since our grandparents came over on the boat from Ireland and Scotland, to ever get better. And we have, tons on both sides of our family of alcoholism and drug abuse. And I don't know if there's any that have set an example. So if my kids have the gene, like, they know. And my daughter has told me, I didn't drink in high school because I knew you didn't go to those meetings. She was so bad, did not want to come. So I don't know who's got the gene and who doesn't still to this day. They're, you know, I watch them and I'm like, yeah, it might be there. But it doesn't scare me. Because I know that, like, they'll know what to do. And we talk about that stuff all the time. So they'll know, they can come to me and say, what do you think? You know, does this sound like a problem? And I think they would. My family says, you guys, we wave our free flag too much. Like, well, I still think it's better to talk about your stuff than it is to, like, go back to the 1950s and act like we're all just fine and perfect. So, we'll talk about then what happened. So when I got here, I was very lucky that I was so willing. The timing was perfect. I was sick of being sick and tired. I was sick of feeling like people didn't know who I really was. Because my ex-husband traveled, I could drink when he was gone. My husband now is a fireman, so he's gone 24 hours. He's home for 48, but 20 feet can do a lot of damage in 24 hours. So he kind of knew, but then he couldn't say you're drunk every day or whatever, but I drank a lot. And but I could sort of live a double life where for a while, my ex-husband never suspected, I don't think. But then I still had people, when I came out and said, I'm an alcoholic, I'm going, like, I told my neighbor, I had to tell the people that I drank with, that I wasn't drinking and why. And they were like, I think you're just blowing this out of proportion. And I'm like, no, you're going to have to trust me, and please don't say that a lot, because that's not helping me when you're trying to convince me that I don't need to go, and I know I need to go. Don't try to save your dream, buddy. Help me save me. And so that was hard. I had to really dig in and make sure that I got active in the program, because it's funny how many people you think would support me, but then they're like, maybe you don't need to go. How you've gone long enough, or what? Maybe it wasn't that bad. And then my husband would say, I'm glad you're going. Do you have to go so often? Cause they don't understand that at the beginning you got to be there all, 90 meetings in 90 days. I was really trying to do what they told me to do, and it helped me. But I had to, all but back over him to get out of the driveway some days, because he's like, you're leaving me here with the kids again. And I'm like, I have to. And as a woman, that's really hard to, say, I'm carving out a minute of my time. So I'm going to do what it takes, or none of you got away for a mom. So stop. But I had to defend my recovery, really on top of working my recovery. And then I got to beat all these people back who are telling me I shouldn't have to go, don't go. But I did keep coming. I learned how to be grateful for all the things that happened in here. So all of that stuff that I carried around, it was baggage and the bad things happened to me. And I learned the longer I was here, and then you can share your story with somebody else, and people benefit from it, then it's not a waste. It's not a waste. And some of the stuff that happened was really bad, really bad. I'll leave out some of the, gorier details, but some of it was bad. And I don't regret any of it now, because there's been times where one young lady was telling me, how she presented it, but she was like, this lady told me this, this, and this, and it really, after that, I never drank again, and I've just, my life's been different. And she goes, you know who that lady was? And I'm like, who? And she said, who's you? And I'm like, oh my gosh. She was like, this lady took all this time out. She was sitting in the car while her daughter had a basketball game, talked to me on the phone. And I'm like, that is so nice. She's like, that was you, you idiot. I was like, oh, because you know what? You don't think anything of it. You're really excited to share the message and, hope people get it, take something away from it, and get what you have. My husband on the way out said, I can't believe you can get up there and talk that long. And I'm like, I don't know, unless you're a professional speaker, we're all nervous. It's hard. That's I sat in speaker meetings, and I hung on what those people said. It meant a lot to me to hear. And I also needed to hear, why? Why should I do this? Because it looks hard. I was willing to do anything no matter how hard, but it really helped for somebody to say, hey, it's going to be worth it. If you just do this, you can have all of this. Just trust me. And then you hear enough people saying, I did that too, and here's where I am. It's fine. Because people have really amazing stories that have got really, way harder things than I can ever dream that I've been through. But all of this stuff now, I'm just grateful for it. It's fine. It used to just make me sad, the whole why me and being a victim. There's so many people that have it worse. And there's so many people that don't make it into these rooms and even have an opportunity to, meet people that will help them. I do home health care, physical therapy, and what we don't see in these rooms are the ones that don't make it and they have Korsakoff's. If anybody knows what that is, it is actually brain damage. It's a kind of dementia with some motor, so you're going to look permanently drunk if you drink hard enough and long enough, and you're stuck like a drunk, and it sucks, because they're like, what do you think? You think you can fix my mom? And I'm like, this person drinks a lot. You can see it. They'll slur a little bit, and they fall a lot, and they've got just a funny, we don't see them here because I didn't make it. And it's really sad, and it's permanent. I also learned after I did my fourth step, that was the first time I heard myself say out loud to somebody like all the things that I did. And like especially like the actions. And it was the first time I was accountable. Like when you say it out loud, you're like, not that it just makes you accountable to not do it again, more accountable. Like I couldn't do this, I couldn't just say it in my head and like talk back in my head, like, well, that wasn't so bad and here's why you did it. Anybody would have done that and you know what I mean? Like there's none of that. It's like here's what happened and here's what I did. And it really helped. It really helped to have somebody like go through, because it was that kind of scientific inventory, that business-like inventory where it was like, okay, here it is. It wasn't painful. It wasn't humiliating or any. It was like, okay, here it is. What are we going to do about it? Like, let's reframe it so you're not angry. You're not a victim. And let's work on those character defects. So then I took away from that, like, the list of things that I needed to work on. And still have it. I do. I actually kept the list, but I didn't keep all the defects. But I kept the list, and it then stuffed in my big book. And sometimes I get it out, and I'm like, okay. And for a while, I'm like, God, I've still got a lot of these. But I took it out the other day, and I'm like, hey, all right, 12 years later, I think a lot of these are like, there's some improvement, you know. But like, self-awareness is the key too in this program. That you'll catch yourself doing things now. I'll catch myself maybe saying something snarky or being negative or whatever, and I'll catch myself a lot sooner. And it doesn't feel good because you know you're going to have to go make an amends, and you're like, oh, I better do it now or not say that, but this isn't going to shake out the way it used to. And the amends, like, so... Nobody really cares as much as we think they do they? Like, I always thought, like, when I get there to, like, have this conversation with them, it's going to be so important. They're so important to them or to me. I don't know. Most of them are like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, and so I carried a lot of stuff around that nobody else even remembered. And I'm feeling terrible about it. And I'm feeling terrible even when I see them, like, in the grocery store or something, and then I'm like, gosh, there they are, you know, try to go down, dodge them and stuff, and like, then later you find out they don't even know what you're talking about. But I carried like all this with, what do people think about me? You know, what are all those things I did in the neighborhood? I was like, I'm going to have to move. I thought, I can't afford to move, so I'm just going to hope they all die or move. I'm going to stick it out. So now I've been there like 20 years, most of them are gone. Thank God. You know, it's like you just, it's hard to go back out there and, like, look people in the eye. So it's easy to some of the big ones, like, close to your family. But then there's those peripheral people that don't get the everyday updates that you're somebody new now. And then you run into one and you're like, oh, God. And they're everywhere when you least expect it. So... especially those amends that you thought, I'll never see them again. And then God will put them in your path. You know, they're right behind you in the checkout line or something. Super. But it always goes better. It always went better than I thought. My big spiritual awakening was when I started working these steps, God showed up. And when I always prayed about stopping drinking, like, and I prayed, and I went to church, and I did all the things I thought I was supposed to do. But they didn't work all by themselves. And it took me coming here to learn how to, like, put my thoughts and my life in God's will. I wasn't doing that. I guess I was just shooting up some requests and then going out balls to the wall doing whatever I thought was the next right thing or trying to control the situation. In here, I learned, just wait a minute. You know, just stop and listen. And then whatever it is that I can do that is the next right thing, do that, turn the rest over to God, and wait. And I saw God showing up in crazy, like, those specific ways that you're like, he's watching. It's like, you can't deny that that didn't have something exactly to do with what was happening And it still is happening. It happened a lot then, but now I see it. So I know God's working in my life. My daughter wanted to go on a mission trip. It was $1,800. And she said, but I can fundraise. And I'm like, you can fundraise $1,800? She's like, yeah, I think I can. In 6 months, I think I can. I was like, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to sign you up for this, but you know if you don't fundraise it, I got to pay the check, right? And do you know within 2 weeks of signing up for that, we have fundraised double.
Wow.
We've fundraised $3,600 in like 2 weeks. That was just because I said, I'm going to have faith. I'm going to have faith. I'm going to turn this over to God. I don't have $1,800 to give you for that, you know? And it was like, bam, here's that plus double. Well, that's good. That's God, you know? And so I know. So now I'm not afraid to take, like, bigger chances. There's my courage. I have it because I have a big God. He's got, you know, whatever happens, it'll get taken care of one way or the other. So that was my spiritual awakening. At that and not regretting the past because somebody will benefit from it. And that makes me happy. I love service work. And that's kind of like where I am now in my life. Service work is a lot of, I have like the greatest job. I get to do service work in a bunch of different ways, not only just like physical therapy, but people are like, can you help me? Can you get my mail? Can you take my trash out? But you know what? It's important to them. Can you do whatever? Can you fix my phone? Like, just crazy. But, you know, there's a little service. Every time I go into somebody's house, they'll find something for me to do. But it's a pleasure. Like, that's important to me. Sometimes just the service work when people are home alone, they have to be homebound to get home health care. So they're alone. They're lonely. And they're sad because they don't feel good. And to be able to go into... And what made me comfortable talking to people was this program, because I was really quiet and really shy for a long time. And then being around here and all different types of people, now I can walk into anybody's home. They can live in the Marietta Country Club, and I had one lady living in a camper with a pit bull tied to the front porch. Like, we go everywhere, and I'm fine anywhere. And I actually like the service work of the poor people, like, the most. That's my favorite. But I did have, as I got sober, I started trying things. When I drank, my mom would say, like, let me just watch the kids, and you need to get out of the house so you can not be stressed out, you know? Like, you need to find some hobbies. Just, you don't need to be sitting here doing this. So I don't even know where I'd go. Like, where would I go? What would I do? What do people do that don't drink? Where do they go? The mall? Like, I didn't want it. It all sounded so stupid and boring. The people sounded stupid and boring. Like, I didn't even know where I would go. Like, what would I get in my car and I'd go nowhere? I don't know. So I had, like, no life, no friends. I had friends, but they were the drinking friends. I just had, like, nothing to do. So when I got sober and this gave me something to do, this was great, it gave me great friends. I had somebody who could call up and say, what would you do? And I finally had like that resource of sanity, you know, maturity, good advice, guidance, for the first time in my adult life. And I really needed it because they say like you're the age of your trauma. So I was probably a 40-year-old, 15-year-old, and just making it all happen, but still, like, by the grace of God, how can a 15-year-old keep all that together? You know, probably pretty poorly, but it was all right. It was okay. But, yeah, emotionally, like, not good. And I grew up in here because I could call another healthy adult and say, what would you do? And they're like, here's what I do. And I'm like, that's what I'm doing then. I didn't even try to, like, make decisions on my own at first. I just did everything I was told. So some of the awesome things that have happened to me since I've gotten sober, I got a home group. Lots of them came tonight. That's so nice, you guys. I'm the GSR for my home group. And so active in that, like going down to Macon and seeing how, and that's amazing. Like, so if anybody hasn't done that, and I recommend it, because it really, you know, we see like how it's so great that everybody puts together the meetings, but then there's like the next level. And then there's the level after, you know, there's all these levels, all these really awesome people, and they're just alcoholics that put all this, like, worldwide run all of this stuff. It's crazy. And it's pretty neat to be, like, part of all of that and see how it works. I'm liking it. Let's see. Oh, another cool thing that has happened is a couple years ago, we brought an orphan into our home from Ukraine. Well, you have to be vetted, you know, like foster care. So you got to, like, to come to your house and do all the interview. And you got to have all the references. And they ask all these questions and stuff. And so I get the phone call from the lady. And we already picked the kids. We're counting the days. Like, the bedroom's ready. Everything. And I get the phone call, and the lady was like, this is so-and-so from New Horizons, and we were reviewing your references, and there's some information on here about you being an alcoholic. My husband's like, that's my mother. God dang it. My mother. And I was like, we don't know who it was, because, like, I tell everybody. And if they're honest, and they're honestly filling out the form, then that's, like, what they should have checked, right? They should check that, and I should pick up the phone and be accountable for that. Like, that's, we don't need to lie anymore. And, but, man, like, I'm sweating. But I was able to say, yes. That's who I, you know, that is who I am, who I was. This is what I do today. This is how long I've been sober, and I'm active in my program. And, you know, even at the GSR level, and they were like, wow, that is so awesome. And, but man, but I could take the call, and I didn't die, you know, and it was like, it was still kind of embarrassing, but it felt good to be able to say, yep, that's what where I was, but this is where I am today. And they were fine with it. So we got the pet, and that was awesome. It was like one of the best things we've ever done, and we still keep in touch with him. And we're going to go see him this coming summer. We're going to go over there and see him and his sister. I went back to college since I got sober. That was hard, harder than I thought. Because I wasn't a kid, no one was doing my laundry or paying my rent and all that other stuff, so I'm like doing it all and being in school all day, and it was really hard. I cried a lot in the car. Made myself go in. It was really hard. They just, the medical stuff, they always make you feel like they're going to plunk you out at any minute so you can be scared to death. But I did it, and I did it, and it was hard, and I did it, and I wanted to quit every day, and I did it. I did one of those little sprint marathon, what do you call them, triathlons. And first day I went out to do the swimming, and I got drowned. I was like, oh, I thought I can swim in a pool, but I never thought about swimming like distance in a way. You can't put your feet down. And I got out of the water, and I was like, oh, I either need to quit or I need to figure this out. So I was like, I think I'm gonna try to figure it out. And I trained, and I did it. But all of the courage came from being successful, from getting sober. So getting sober is hard. It's hard, and I did it. And so then I was like, hey, I did that. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. And then I'm like, hey, I'm going to try something else. And, like, now I'm getting, like, I feel like that kid who should have went out and did it. I'm finally getting my turn to, like, go do, be who, at 50 years old, like, be my authentic self. Be who I always knew that I was, but just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it without alcohol, you know, and today, today I'm doing it, and I'm loving it.